imagine sitting in a luxury penthouse.
Okay, sounds nice.
Right. But now imagine that penthouse is sitting directly on top of your city's main water valve, and it's just completely choking the plumbing for half a million people.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And the tenant, absolutely refuses to move. Today, we're looking at what I think is the ultimate urban paradox.
It really is.
So whether you're a lifelong New Yorker, an urban planning nerd, or just insanely curious about how massive cities actually function, this deep dive is going to completely change how you view the spaces you walk through every day. We are looking at Madison Square Garden.
And we are pulling our insights today from a really highly detailed 2026 public analytical report. It was jointly published by the American newspaper and American TV.
Right.
It's basically this exhaustive look at the collision between real estate, elite sports, and public transit. It really forces us to look past the marquee lights and examine the underlying mechanics of how this specific building operates.
The executive thesis of this analysis lays out something staggering. I mean, truly wild. It argues that Madison Square Garden isn't just an arena, it is what they call a live event capital machine.
Right, a machine.
Exactly. It's this venue where sports, celebrity culture, and New York real estate all fuse with a massive public rail node. Like, it brings an enormous amount of wealth into Midtown Manhattan.
Tons of wealth.
But, and this is the kicker, it occupies the exact precise airspace needed to make Penn Station, which is the busiest transit hub in the region, a breathable, functional civic space.
The paradox is just built right into the architecture. I
Yeah.
mean, the arena is an undeniable economic engine, right? It keeps the Knicks and the Rangers anchored right in the commercial center of the city.
Yeah.
But by existing where it does, its physical mass essentially acts as a concrete lid over the train station down below.
Like a literal lid.
Literally, it blocks daylight, and it creates these notoriously claustrophobic commuter tunnels, and it just forces this constant, decades-long debate about what a city should prioritize when space is, its most precious resource.
Okay, let's unpack this. Because to really understand why a massive 22,000-seat arena is sitting directly on top of a subterranean train station, we first have to realize that Madison Square Garden wasn't always there.
No, not at all.
In fact, it's an arena on the move. I kept thinking of it as like an urban hermit crab.
A hermit crab, I love that.
Yeah, it's this massive cultural organism that just keeps outgrowing its shell and scuttling across Manhattan to wherever the money and transportation currents are flowing strongest.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not a square, it's not a garden, and it's not even at Madison Square anymore.
Exactly. Relocation is literally baked into its DNA. The historical data mapped out here, drawing from the Madison Square Park Conservancy and Britannica, tracks four distinct lives of the garden.
Four. I always lose track.
Yeah, four. So MSG, I started way back in the 1870s at Madison Avenue and 26th Street.
Okay.
It was an open-air venue for circuses, dog shows, mass spectacles, that kind of thing. Then by 1890, they built MSG Tier on that exact same site.
So they just upgraded the shell?
Right. And this one was a massive Beaux-Arts monument designed by Stanford White.
Wait, for those of us who aren't, architecture buffs, what does a Beaux-Arts monument actually look like in this context? Because an arena for dog shows doesn't sound very majestic.
Think grand, sweeping stone columns, ornate arches, highly classical European styling. It was a literal palace for the public. It was very reflective of the Gilded Age and heavily focused on high society events.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was a true architectural landmark.
But if it was such a magnificent monument, why didn't they just leave it there? I mean, you don't usually tear down palaces.
Well, the economics of live entertainment shifted drastically. By 1925, high society galas just weren't paying the bills the way mass consumer entertainment could.
Follow the money.
Always. So they moved. MSG Third was built up on 8th Avenue between 49th and 50th Streets by a boxing promoter named Tex Rickard.
Tex Rickard, right.
Yeah, and this marked the pivot to the modern ticketed era hockey, basketball, political conventions. They chased the broader public audience. And that set the stage for the final, most consequential move.
MSG4.
Exactly. MSG IV, the current building,
Yeah.
which opened in 1968 on the Penn Station Superblock.
And that fourth move required a brutal bargain because they didn't just find an empty parking lot in Midtown. They chose to build it by tearing down the original Pennsylvania Station, which was widely considered an architectural
A
masterpiece.
total masterpiece.
But I never fully understood the mechanism there. Why would the city or the railroad agree to demolish a masterpiece just to build a basketball arena?
What's fascinating here is that we have to look at the financial desperation of the mid-century railroads. Following World War II, the rise of the interstate highway system and commercial airlines, absolutely gutted passenger rail travel.
Oh, sure. Everyone was driving or flying.
Right. The Pennsylvania Railroad was bleeding money. They couldn't afford the upkeep on this massive soaring transit palace. So they engaged in a maneuver called selling air rights.
Air rights.
Yeah. They essentially said, we will keep the underground tracks to run our trains, but we will sell the empty sky above those tracks to the highest bidder.
And MSG bought the sky.
MSG bought the sky. They demolished the Grand Station, buried the platforms underground, and built the arena right on top.
And because of that trade sacrificing civic grandeur for an arena in the sky, they created one of the most stressful structural stacks in America. Let's visualize this structural stack for you listening right now.
It's quite the visual.
It really is. Think of it not just as a layer cake, but a layer cake where the frosting is actively leaking into the batter. You have completely different worlds forced to share the same narrow slice of Manhattan.
Exactly.
At the top, layer one, you have the arena bowl and the ceiling. Layer two, right below that, holds the concourses, premium suites, and hospitality zones. Layer three is the street level, the security perimeter, the ticket gates.
And that is exactly where the friction begins.
Right, because once you push down under the pavement into layer four, you hit the Penn Station commuter concourses. And finally, layer five at the very bottom, the dark train platforms.
Yeah.
So you have 20,000 exhilarated sports fans pouring out of the top layers, mixing directly into the exact same narrow corridors as 200,000 exhausted commuters trying to navigate the bottom layers.
The structural term for this is a vertical condenser. Instead of a sprawling suburban stadium that uses, you know, massive acres of parking lots to buffer the crowd, MSG takes all of that stadium-level energy and condenses it vertically.
Right.
And the transit adjacency is technically brilliant because it prevents car dependence. You do not need a massive highway interchange to manage those 20,000 people.
But wait, I have to challenge that upside. I mean, is preventing car dependence really worth trapping hundreds of thousands of commuters in a dark, claustrophobic basement every single day? That seems like a terrible trade-off for the public.
Well, from a purely experiential standpoint, it is terrible for the commuter. The physical mass of that vertical condenser acts as a heavy lid. It robs Penn Station of daylight, it makes the wayfinding notoriously confusing, and it strips the station of its dignity.
Total.
But from a purely spatial and logistical standpoint, in a city as dense as New York, there simply is no horizontal space to put an arena of that magnitude.
Right.
By stacking it, they solved the geometry problem, even if they created a severe human friction problem.
Right. Well, if the physical structure is such a nightmare for the commuters underneath, the obvious question is, why not just move the arena again? We established it's a hermit crab, just let it find a new shell.
You think too, right?
Yeah. But here's where it gets really interesting. The answer lies in the sheer, undeniable gravity of its financial success. The analysis makes a point that completely shifted how I view this brand.
The pricing tool aspect.
Yes. We've all heard the phrase, the world's most famous arena. I thought that was just a fun marketing slogan. But it is actually a defined pricing tool. It is a mechanism that converts cultural memory into pure profit margin.
To understand the scale of that gravity, we really have to look closely at the SEC filings detailed in the 2026 data. These are legally required financial disclosures, meaning we get a highly accurate look at the actual revenue engine.
And they separate it out, right?
Yeah, separate it into the sports side and the entertainment side. MSG Sports generated over $1.039 billion in fiscal year 2025 alone. They monetize every inch of those premium layer cake suites.
That is wild.
And the franchise valuations are just stratospheric. The Knicks are valued at $9.75 billion and the Rangers at $4 billion.
That volume is hard to even wrap your head around, and that's just the sports side. MSG Entertainment, which, by the way, also operates Radio City Music Hall, the Chicago Theater, and the Beacon Theater, they hosted nearly 6 million guests across 975 events in a single fiscal year.
Which is just a massive footprint. That volume reveals the mechanism of their pricing power. When an artist books Madison Square Garden, or when a fan buys a ticket, they aren't just paying for good acoustics or a good sight line.
No. Not at all.
They are paying a premium to step onto the exact same stage where Muhammad Ali fought Joe Frazier in the 1971 fight of the century. They are paying to sit in the venue that has hosted the Big East college basketball tournament since 1983 and will continue to until at least 2032. MSG effectively monetizes its own history.
I really want you to think about this the next time you go to an event. If you buy a ticket to a game or a concert there, the event doesn't start when you sit down in your seat. It starts down in the subway. It starts in the restaurants on 7th Avenue.
Exactly.
You aren't just paying to watch a basketball game. You are paying to participate in a New York ritual. And MSG knows exactly how to charge for that ritual.
And that immense financial power brings us directly to the core standoff. Because MSG sits on a goldmine of real estate and generates billions of dollars, its operating permits have become the ultimate political weapon.
For the civic planners, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Civic planners who are desperate to fix the broken train station underneath it.
It really goes back to the water valve analogy. You have a city that desperately needs to renovate its plumbing, but sitting directly on top of the pipes is a billionaire tenant who refuses to move.
The urban politics surrounding this are fierce. In 2023, the New York City Council had to vote on renewing MSG's operating permit. They approved only a 5-year permit for this massive 22,000-seat arena.
Only 5 years. For a structure that permanent, a 5-year permit seems practically hostile. Usually something like this gets a 50-year lease or operates in perpetuity.
Oh, the brevity was entirely intentional. The council used that incredibly short timeline as a cudgel to force MSG to the negotiating table.
Wow.
Without that permit, legally, the arena cannot operate. It is the one piece of leverage the city has to demand that MSG cooperate with the rail agencies to redesign the station below.
So they basically put a ticking clock on a $1 billion machine.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, planners essentially face three choices with Penn Station. Choice one, keep MSG exactly where it is. This avoids massive relocation costs, but it means you can never give the transit station a soaring, sunlit ceiling.
Right, you're stuck with the lid.
Exactly. Choice two, relocate MSG. This is the absolute dream for civic groups like the Regional Plan Association. They've argued for years that moving the garden is the only way to build a truly great transit hub.
But practically speaking, forcing relocation requires eminent domain, billions in buyouts, and navigating a massive legal minefield, right?
Exactly why it remains largely a dream, which leaves choice three, rebuild around it. The 2026 data shows that the federal government and Amtrak officially announced their path forward based on this third option.
Okay, so what does that look like?
As of May 2026, they're opting for a massive renovation of the station while keeping the arena right on top of it. They plan to construct a grand 8th Avenue entrance and replace cramped walkways with open concourses where possible.
So they gave up on moving it?
Basically, yes. Crucially, they accepted that moving MSG is simply too legally and financially complex for the current political era.
They are trying to fix the plumbing without evicting the tenant. It's a massive compromise. But honestly, MSG's stubborn permanence above Penn Station isn't just an isolated real estate quirk. It actually perfectly illustrates how Manhattan functions compared to anywhere else in the country.
The comparisons highlight just how unique this building's DNA is. Consider the Barclays Center in Brooklyn.
Oh, yeah, good example.
It's a modern indoor arena sitting on a transit hub, but it was integrated into a wider, modern Brooklyn redevelopment project. It lacks that century-old global symbolic weight that acts as MSG's primary pricing tool.
Or even Radio City Music Hall, which, you know, MSG Entertainment also owns.
Right. Radio City is a cultural jewel box. It's a beautiful, historic theater for the rock hits and award shows, but it does not have the brute force sports finance engine attached to it, nor does it have an entire regional transit system stacked directly beneath its floorboards.
And if we look at traditional stadiums like Yankee Stadium in the Bronx or MetLife in the Meadowlands, they are massive sports monuments, but they sit on the periphery. They have room to breathe.
Exactly.
Madison Square Garden takes that exact same stadium-level intensity, the same roaring crowds, the intense logistics, the heavy security perimeters, and crams it directly into the core street grid of the densest island in America.
It's completely unique.
So what does this all mean? When you step back and look at the vertical layer cake, the billions of dollars, the fierce political leverage over the operating permits, and the 2026 Amtrak decision. Oh, wait, let me rephrase that. When you look at all of this together, what is the ultimate takeaway here?
The conclusion here is profound. Madison Square Garden is the ultimate Manhattan operating system.
I love that phrase.
It's so accurate. It shows you exactly how the city solves the problem of severe spatial scarcity. It doesn't spread out. It builds vertically.
Yeah.
It turns location and cultural memory into premium pricing. And it demonstrates how infrastructure decisions made during the railroad crisis of the 1960s completely dictate the political realities of the 2020s. The very thing that makes the Garden a triumph, its unbelievable intimacy and live entertainment energy placed right in the center of the action, is exactly what makes it an immovable obstacle to public infrastructure.
It really reframes the whole building. Madison Square Garden is far more than just a home for the Knicks, the Rangers, or a stage for mega concerts. It is a literal physical negotiation over what a city values most.
Absolutely.
Does the city prioritize private profit, cultural memory, and grand spectacle? Or does it prioritize public mobility, open space, and civic dignity? Every single time a commuter trying to catch a train bumps shoulders with a concert goer buying a hot dog on 33rd Street, you are watching that negotiation happen in real time.
This raises an important question, not just for New Yorkers, but for anyone looking closely at how their own city is built and maintained. The tension between private, profitable icons and necessary public infrastructure is everywhere once you know what to look for.
So I want to leave you with a thought to mull over today. Take a walk around your own city. Think about your biggest, most famous landmarks, your stadiums, your towering corporate headquarters.
Look closely at them.
Yeah. Are those buildings serving your city's public infrastructure, or is the public infrastructure trapped serving them? If someone handed you a blank check tomorrow to completely redesign your city's busiest transit hub, would you sacrifice the sky above it just to keep the ultimate entertainment venue? Thank you for joining us on this deep dive into the forces shaping Madison Square Garden. Keep looking up, keep looking down, and keep questioning the spaces you walk through every single day.